Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hello and welcome inside hour four of the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Coming up in 20 minutes, we're going to head out to Vegas. Find out what Vegas is thinking about the NFL playoff games this weekend. But tonight was a big night in the NBA for a few reasons. Number one, let's kick things off because, listen, we kick things off with the system quarterback. We'll kick things off with what happened with the Warriors and the Rockets. The Rockets, who are hopefully crossing their fingers that the Lakers will want to trade them Russell Westbrook so they can trade John Wall away. But the Warriors win tonight, and they win thanks to a big shot at the end, but they also win thanks to a chair, which I think might be going on eBay right now for a lot of money. Now, the Warriors have played pretty well all season long, but they've kind of come back to earth a little bit in the past couple of weeks.
Sure.
Tonight, they were playing the Rockets, and it was a tie game in the final seconds, and Steph Curry decided to untie it, but it was after he really took it to a chair.
Lines up at the far hash mark. 5.1 to go. John Goble blows his whistle, hands the ball to Porter. Otto looking, Otto waiting. Curry with the catch, guarded by Kevin Porter Jr. Curry dribbles on him, step back jumper on the way. Good! At the buzzer! Ball game over! Stephen Curry runs for the locker room, but was head off of the pass by Raymond Ritter, the Warriors PR man.
So there it is, the first game-winning shot of Steph Curry. Steph Curry wins the game with a step-back jumper, and clearly this is why other teams know how to defend Steph Curry in the playoffs. When it comes down to the final seconds, they don't let him take a shot, right? The Rockets decide to single-cover Curry. He's got exactly what he wants, so he dribbles to the middle, takes a step back, and hits a 15-footer and wins the game. Yeah, this is why the Warriors usually have they struggle at the end, because other teams just deny Curry the chance to take that shot. They roll coverages to him. They do things. This did not happen. And the Rockets decided we're going to go one-on-one. Curry hits the game-winning shot and wins the game. So I give Curry credit, but clearly you see when you're one-on-one, that's what's going to happen. But Curry crediting the chair he kicked prior to his game-winning shot. And right now, that's become like this famous thing on social media that people want to bid on the chair if that jump starts the season, because he came out of a timeout and just gave it to the chair, kicked it, like kicked the top of the chair, like I want to break the seat part of it, and then went on hit the game-winning shot. That chair, Mike Harmon, could be a big part of NBA history.
Well, all sorts of memorabilia. If he just signs the top of it, it's already five figures just because. It was a game-used chair and a game-abused chair, so people would get excited about it. You know, before the loss to Indiana, and this came out a little later, I missed the tweets. Did you see that they skipped the scheduled practice and had a home run derby?
Oh,
so
very nice.
A lot of folks clowning because then, you know, talking about how tired they were and then they lost to the Pacers. But a good win tonight against a pesky Houston Rockets team that once upon a time had about a good 2 weeks. But Steph Curry comes up with the big shot here to get folks off his back a little. I did see our own Robert Guerra, producer of The Odd Couple, pointing out that right now, Russell Westbrook, for all everybody hates him, has a better field goal percentage than Steph does.
So congratulations to the Warriors. Sorry about that chair. All of those things for Steph Curry.
I'd buy it. I'd buy that for a dollar.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but it would be, you're right, it would be at least, it's probably five figures now.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question about it.
And then if he signed it, then you're getting
up to... Well, and if there's a dent in there, look, I can get mad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Steph Curry fired up after his first career game-winning buzzer beater. You were kind of joking, but it's true. Quote, "It's about time I made one." That was from NBA TV just 4 minutes ago.
I believe he's got 20 game-winning shots in his career, I think. But something like this, look, he just doesn't do it that often. And that's the issue with the Warriors is that when they fall short in the playoffs, this is my whole thing. Steph Curry can't get his shot off in the final minute of games because other teams decide to swarm the perimeter and it's too tough for him to find his way around and find a player for a shot. Now, maybe things will be different this year because the Warriors team this year is much better than it was a year ago. You can have Clay hit a shot or Poole can hit a shot. I mean, maybe you can find that Draymond Green has rededicated himself to basketball. But in the past couple of years, they don't do it. You know, teams say, okay, Steph Curry's not going to beat us. Somebody else is going to have to hit a shot with a second left on the clock to do it. And Steph dribbles around and tries to find it. And it's too late in the game clock for him to do anything and pass. So he tries to shove off a crazy-ass shot. And it's just not a good option. So maybe now with the Warriors being better, but you're never going to see that again. A single cover Steph Curry in the final play of the game. What are you kidding? I mean, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, what did the Rockets think was going to happen on that? If you're single covering Steph Curry, you're going to give him that shot wherever it is on the floor. You have to be able to move things around and force Steph to give it to somebody else and force somebody else to make that shot. So it was great by Steph Curry, but, you know, wow, that really was not how you needed to play defense on that final play.
Well, NBA TV puts it out. It's his first game-winning buzzer beater. There you go. So Steph Curry, night one of the rest of your career. Let's go.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Now, meanwhile, how about Doc Rivers? All right now, Doc Rivers had an interesting night tonight. The Sixers blew a 24-point lead to the Clippers, losing that game. That's pretty much a big shocker because they had it going on. And then Doc got a really crazy question after the game. Maybe he thought, you know, Penny Hardaway talked about how he doesn't like the media last night. I can do the same thing. Doc gets a question about how much coaching had to do with the blown lead tonight, and this is what Doc Rivers had to say.
What part of this loss would you attribute to coaching?
I don't know. Would you ask Pop that question? No, you wouldn't. So don't ask me that question. I burned that.
Oh, he's mad.
I believe I've earned it.
Mad.
Well, you get to run some few good men line right there.
You have to ask me nicely. It's an out-of-bounds question. It's a really frontal assault type question of how much of this is your fault, Doc? But did you really think you were going to get an answer from Doc Rivers? Did you really think he was going to take the blame for anything? Doc doesn't do that. Doc has never taken the blame for any of his teams losing. It's always somebody else's fault. I'll throw Ben Simmons under the bus. It's, you know, in the Clippers, this is not my fault. He's never taken the blame. Never. He's never taken the blame for losing. And it's not that it's always his fault, but a lot of times the coach needs to take the blame for a game because he needs to take pressure off his players. And he needs to do that. And Doc never does because he doesn't want the narrative out there that it's his fault or he's a bad coach. No matter how many times he couldn't get out of the second round of the playoffs, no matter how many times his team has blown leads, nothing is ever his fault. So did you really think he was going to say, oh yeah, completely my fault. That was all me. There's so many answers he could have given. He could have said, yeah, you know what? This is on me. This is 78% on me. Like Steve Kerr would have said, this is 64.15% on me and 33.85% on the players. But Doc never does this. Doc never says, yeah, this is my fault. Never, because it's just not who he is. It's always somebody else. It's a player, and it's never anything about my coaching. So I get that this is an out-of-bounds question, but did you really think he was going to answer it that way? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but we know there's going to be some percentage of questions that come out of the media that are designed to get a quote. Good, bad, ugly. You know, I've already got my story written, and I need the quote. So this was probably a hit piece, as they like to call them, you know, of, hey, they blew a 24-point lead. We're still in the standoff of the whole Ben Simmons situation. And, well, here was Doc Rivers' response when I asked about his level of responsibility. Boom! There you go. Right? I mean, it writes itself, and now you got 1,000 words that you can spill out in a matter of seconds. Right? That's like the guy, how long did it take you to write that song? I don't know, about 4 minutes on the back of a cocktail napkin. I saw a road sign, I chuckled to myself, and the beat just came to me. Right? I had it just like that. I mean, that's kind of a column that you write after a question and answer session like that. You knew you could poke the bear because he clearly came in seething, angry over that kind of debacle, right? And number two topic in the NBA right now, if we really kind of take it out on a larger scale, right? Because of what isn't happening with Ben Simmons. So certainly the spotlight on, and when you have games that are lost like that, it's like, well, you know, having a guy like Simmons around would have helped us, no? Right? Yeah. No. Yeah.
Not my fault. He didn't want to show up. Not my fault. It's not my fault.
He could have gone and just said, you know what? It's more Daryl Morey because he won't pull the trigger on this damn trade. It's his fault. So, or he starts singing, it was your fault, out of Into the Woods.
Into the Woods. Into the Woods. Into the Woods. So we have heroics in Golden State. We have Doc Rivers mad. And no, Doc Rivers is never going to take any blame for anything. And then in Orlando, we had the night Carmelo Anthony saved Frank Vogel's job. 23 points off the bench. The Lakers beat the 8-win Magic. Things are okay for now. What about Russell Westbrook? As he said following the win tonight, in which he did play pretty well, he said he has turned the page to do what he has to do, and that's what he did tonight. Now, he had a big night tonight with 18, 11, and 7 assists, 3 steals. He played pretty well. This is in the wake of him getting sat for the last 4 minutes of the loss to the Pacers. Now, in the end, what does this do, right? We've heard the Westbrook-John Wall trade rumors that came up before the game. Yes, the Lakers should do it. I don't care if you're giving away a fifth more. He's someone that they need a new coach. They need a new player mix. They need everything. It's been fire everything at the Lakers this week. They now know they have no more room for error. They can't continue to sit here and say, wait till AD gets back, wait till this happens. There are big changes that will be coming if the Lakers don't play with a sense of urgency. And you know what? Tonight they had it. Frank Vogel was coaching like it was game 7 of the finals. All the big changes he was making, moving guys in and out of the lineup. You saw big, energetic play for the entire game, not just the first 3 quarters, and they fall asleep in the fourth like we've seen so far. So at least they know that they have to pick it up now. And that's the one thing from this week, is that from all sides, the Lakers can't sit back now and say, just wait, everything is fine, everything is good. They know they got to pick it up. Now, it's an 8-win team they beat tonight, and they had to come from behind in the second half to do it, but at least there's that. Do I think this is going to change things for the Lakers? No, they're a 500 team. This is a great win. Then the next game they play, they're going to lose by 20. And then they'll win a game. This is just who they are. But at the very least, you're looking for positives for the Lakers. They now know this is the kind of effort they need if they're going to win games.
Certainly got tested in tonight's contest, and let's face it, this road trip is no joke, right? So if you were looking for the firing of Frank Vogel, I mean, that ballad isn't going to play very long. This is not a 60s Bob Dylan song that just kind of kept going and going. Wait, he's on his ninth verse. Well, hey, Bob was inspired that day. So it's that kind of thing when we're looking at this road trip. It could be very short-lived for Frank Vogel, but you got to like the effort you at least got tonight. And, you know, people aren't losing the irony of it all, and that Russell Westbrook finished this game on the bench as they had a comfortable lead and he didn't need to be.
Yeah. Are you okay to sit on the bench now? Wait, we're up big. Oh, okay. Now I'm okay with it. Now I'm all right. We'll see.
But he had a pretty clean game, right?
He did.
You certainly have to acknowledge that for all that swirling about. And I don't know. At some point, he's going to pop off on the reporters. You can feel it coming, because someone's going to ask him a dumbass question like they asked Penny Hardaway and like they asked Doc Rivers.
That's not my fault. No, look, nothing's my fault, okay? 0% coaching fault. 100% on the players. 99% players, 1% on the pregame meal. All right, that's percentage right there. It's 0% on me all the time.
It's not Blake's fault.
I got a suit that says 0% on the back. That's me. It's my percentage, my fault. That's what it is. Not my fault. Dealing with a dead battery, head to AutoZone, America's number one battery destination. They offer free battery services like free battery testing and free battery charging. Their free battery testing can help you know if you need a new battery or not. And if you do happen to need a replacement battery, they can help with that too. They got reliable replacement batteries starting at just $79.99, and they're the only place you can find proven tough Duralast batteries. So next time you're having battery trouble, head to AutoZone, your battery solution and America's number one battery destination. Well, what does Vegas think about the NFL playoff games this weekend? They see some upsets. They see some big moves. What are the big plays? Oh, our guy in Vegas stops by with all the answers. Coming up next right here, Jason and Mike, this is Fox.
It was limp and dangly. I had to pull it out.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Mic check. Mic check.
If you want exclusive insight from the biggest names in the sports game, what's good? This is national champion and former pro baller Chris Johnson. And let me tell you a little bit about my new series, KJ Live.
KJ Live is the only show featuring me going one-on-one with the brightest basketball minds on the planet to get the real.
And when I say real, I mean that real. I got legendary Hall of Famers, elite coaches, and the top basketball insiders bringing you a unique perspective on all things hoops culture that you will not find anywhere else.
To make your next move your best move.
And tap in with me on KJ Live, wherever you get your podcast from.
Oh, yeah. Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
I'm going to eat that tiny bit of ass up now.
Well, let's look ahead at the big games this weekend in the NFL. No better place to go to than to Vegas right now, as we spend every Friday night with our Vegas insider, Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter, at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman, former odds maker at Caesars, co-founder Bet the Board podcast, analyst for CBS Sports HQ, and a guy who lost a lot of money tonight because he had the Rangers getting two goals against the Carolina Hurricanes, and that did not work out for you. Todd, thank you after such a big loss coming on the show tonight.
You know, Smith, even I know you don't bet the Rangers plus a goal and a half or two and a half when Andrei Georgiev gets to start over Igor Shesterkin. So I recognize discretion is the better part of valor. We'll see if the Rangers can bounce back tomorrow night as $3 favorites against the beleaguered Coyotes.
No, you never bet against my Carolina Hurricanes. That's my whole thing. That's my point.
Canes are playing great hockey, and if there's a team that has better celebrations in the NHL after they celebrate each 2 points, I don't think there is anyone out there than what the Caniacs put forth on a nightly basis.
Did you not catch Smith that he was talking about, you know, Igor and others? Like, it just rolled off his tongue.
It did.
You couldn't
even
stump him with hockey.
No, well, that's all he tweets about is hockey. It's like football is like the most tiniest bit of Todd Furman's kingdom.
You know, football is a major part of my kingdom throughout the course of the regular season. But, you know, apparently I infuriated a fan base in lovely Nashville earlier this week when I called the Titans-Bengals game the JV because most NFL fans were excited about watching the varsity play Sunday afternoon. So a nice young lady in Lisa happened to call up the radio station and, you know, after bless my heart this and bless my heart that, took some jabs at my credibility and told me I had to remember exactly where I was going on radio, a segment that I've done for, you know, a little bit longer than I've been on with you boys on Friday nights.
Oh, well, there you go. You know, sometimes you need the people to get you back on track, Todd.
Yeah, exactly. You have to remember where you came from. And if you can't infuriate your listenership, as you guys know all too well, you're not doing a good job in this business.
All right, well, let's start with the varsity game tomorrow. Let's start with Cincinnati and Tennessee. Maybe the biggest football game in the history of the NFL. Look, I'd love to pick Cincinnati in this game. I love the energy they have around the team. And Burrow and Chase could be Montana and Rice for the next 10 years. Can Cincinnati win this game tomorrow?
Well, they can. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I mean, when you go into battle as an underdog in hostile territory and you arguably have the more complete quarterback with a dynamic wide receiver, anything's capable. If Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase get on track and they're able to integrate some of their other weapons. But I do think you're going to need a much bigger performance from Joe Mixon than we've seen in recent weeks. When you look back over his statistical performances in the last six games, he hasn't averaged more than 4 yards per carry in any of them. So I think the Bengals will need a Herculean effort, and they'll have to be on their A game, whereas the Titans have a couple of different pitches they can beat you with, one of which is the return of Derrick Henry, which will open up their play-action attack, and I think Titans fans are hopefully optimistic that what they thought was going to be a trade that put them over the top didn't pay dividends during the regular season, but all will be forgiven and forgotten if Julio Jones puts together three tremendous performances in a row and brings the Lombardi Trophy back to Music City.
Yeah, I kind of like the chicanery they did with releasing tickets via the Ticketmaster official partner and everything. That was a nice move for home field advantage as well. Now, in the evening game, Todd, 49ers.
It's the almighty dollar over home field advantage. Don't kid yourself. Don't sugarcoat it. It doesn't matter if it's the crypto.com, whatever the hell they're calling it now, where the Lakers are happy to go 500,
sure.
Or the Red Sea that we saw infiltrate SoFi Stadium, which spurred the 49ers to an improbable playoff run with that second half comeback against the Rams. No such thing as home field unless you want to go up to Lambeau and freeze your behind off.
Well, that's it. 5.5 is the number there. Over-under sitting at 47. We saw a fantastic game earlier this year. Debo Samuel's become a star, but a lot of questions about health for the 49ers coming into this one.
Yeah, and rightfully so. When you look at Jimmy Garoppolo, we knew he was dealing with a hand injury, now dealing with a sprained shoulder or whatever the hell they're going to call it leading up till kickoff. Fred Warner had the lower body injury that kept him from finishing the game against the Cowboys. He's expected to go. Nick Bosa, of course, clears concussion protocol, but some of the folks we've spoken to have told me that if this was a regular season game, Nick Bosa wouldn't be out there trying to push things. So those factors don't exactly harbor a lot of optimism when you're looking at the 49ers and everything they're going to need to go right if they're able to go into Lambeau and pull off the outright upset against an Aaron Rodgers team, and Aaron Rodgers specifically, who's been as dynamic as any quarterback playing in the elements. 24-6 straight up, 29-1 ATS, and 67-10 as far as his touchdown interception ratio in career home games in freezing temperatures. We know how good the Packers have been at home all season this year. They've been outstanding under Matt LaFleur since he took over. But Jimmy Garoppolo, no slouch to the underdog role. I mean, he's gone 14-4 against the number catching points. And I do think the Niners will be able to run the football, generate a little bit of pressure. And if they don't have that costly turnover, something that almost sent them packing last week in Dallas, I think the 49ers will have a chance to win this game. I like them plus the points.
Hey, before we get to Sunday's game, one of the big topics we had this week was the status of Jimmy Garoppolo and where he would be next season. And you know, I put him on the Steelers. They have to make a move. There's not going to be a lot of guys available this offseason. What would be the leader in the clubhouse for where Jimmy Garoppolo plays next year if it's not San Francisco?
I think it's a great question. Do the Jets want to trade a top five pick to get a franchise quarterback, or is that off the table?
Okay, the Jets don't make the trade. Let's say they stick with Zach Wilson for one more year.
I think Zach Wilson will actually be just fine, to be honest. I think you saw signs and reasons to be optimistic about his ongoing development. We'll see if they can get a big wide receiver in the draft to try and help with all of the slot weapons they have working at their disposal. But when you look around for Jimmy Garoppolo and likely landing spots, the Pittsburgh Steelers make a ton of sense, despite Mike Tomlin saying he wants a more mobile and slightly athletic quarterback, given what they dealt with in the twilight of Big Ben's career. I'll offer up a destination that I think is a little bit of a long shot, but wouldn't stun me at all. If he were to end up right here in Las Vegas, if Vegas goes in a different direction and parts ways with Derek Carr, knowing how much money he may command in the open market, there's a chance that Jimmy could be a logical fit here in a pro-style offense, depending on who they name as a head coach, whether it's Rick Bisaccia getting the full-time job or them going outside the organization. A Harbaugh and Garoppolo pairing would be awfully interesting if that's exactly the way the silver and black elect to go.
Well, I'll take the low road, and I mean, obviously, Jimmy's shown no aversion to folks who are big stars and the big bright lights, and you know, he could show up at an AVN convention.
Exactly. There's plenty of ways to get yourself into trouble out here, and unlike being in the Bay Area, it's more widely accepted and actually smiled upon here if you frequent establishments regularly with women of the night and everything else along those lines. So Jimmy would fit right in here in lovely Las Vegas, where a lot of casino executives have found themselves settling down with women who would call themselves actresses back in the early 20s.
All right. Well, that's you always say what's going on in Vegas. You go, nothing's going on. Now suddenly you're, hey, I'm out the bright lights, big city, I'm ready to go.
I didn't say I was out and about hobnobbing. I'm an old man. It's a young man's game out there. If we were doing these interviews when I was 22, 23, and 24, a lot of those things I wouldn't be able to regurgitate on air for a family-friendly show. Right now at 39, rapidly approaching 40, I've rattled off two episodes in the final season of Dawson's Creek with my lovely fiance earlier this evening. That's about as exciting as things get in these parts.
Nicely done.
All right, so now we can head to Sunday. We went from Lade, now we're at Dawson's Creek. Let's go to Sunday. It's difficult to look at this game and see that there's an actual underdog in it. The Chiefs have been playing well. The Bills have been playing fantastic. How do you see this?
I think when you look at the way these games have gone, and we can start with the late game first, I think Buffalo is an extremely live underdog. I love what I've seen from this team down the stretch, playing much better and complete football on both sides of the ball. Now, the defense will be in for a shock to the system. This will be the first time they step up in class against a dynamic passing attack without a true number one in their defensive backfield in Tre'Davious White. You look at the recent run of competition, and not to bring Zach Wilson back into this mix, but a far cry from Patrick Mahomes and what you're going to encounter at Arrowhead in this spot. But I think Brian Daboll showing a willingness to get Devin Singletary involved. You've seen more Isaiah McKenzie. We know what Dawson Knox can contribute when healthy. I think Kansas City's defense is in for a world of hurt. The Chiefs have firepower in their own right, but I think Buffalo goes in on the road and atones for the game that got away last year in the AFC title. As far as the early game on Sunday, I mean, this is one, honestly, guys, that I don't think I'm going to have an investment in by any stretch. When you look at the Rams and Bucks, they'll play with a little bit of revenge and a chip on their shoulder for a game that got away from them quickly at SoFi earlier this year. And this is a Rams team that's going to struggle to try and establish a ground game against this Tampa defensive front. But I do think somewhere rubber has to meet the road, and Tampa being down some weapons, even if Leonard Fournette is a full go in this spot, I think the absence of a Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown really hurt in their ability to attack a Rams secondary that's vulnerable in spots, but at the same time, Jalen Ramsey neutralizes Mike Evans. Rob Gronkowski may be forced to chip a little bit more to slow down that pass rush if Tristan Wirfs and Ryan Jensen aren't able to go for a full 60 minutes. I think the Bucs have their hands full. I'd lean under the total in this game, but I think it'll be a fascinating matchup to see if the defending champions move on or Sean McVay can erase some of those Super Bowl demons in a 13-3 loss against Tom Brady a few seasons ago.
So we got Cam Akers back and, medical marvel, and that's all fine and interesting, but it's all about Stafford, right? That's the narrative. I mean, many people have already written their stories. They're just waiting to finish that final paragraph. With Whitworth out, how big a concern is the errant throws that we saw towards the end of the regular season?
Yeah, I don't worry as much about Whitworth's absence. I think it's all being a made to be a lot bigger deal. When you look at some of the numbers so far this season, I mean, Matthew Stafford had 85 dropbacks without Andrew Whitworth on the field. He was pressured 20% of the time on those snaps compared to 27% with Whitworth in the mix. Now, I know they're different sample sizes, but I think Joe Noteboom has done an outstanding job filling in. Sean McVay knows what he loses as far as veteran leadership, but this is a young man's game like we've talked about, and maybe having an old codger on the offensive line slows them down a little bit. I think Matthew Stafford goes out there, plays loose and free. He had that 800-pound gorilla lifted off his back, getting that elusive first playoff win in dominant fashion against Arizona. And if it wasn't for such a lopsided score margin, I mean, Stafford would have had one of the biggest days of his career when you look at some of the efficiency numbers, only throwing the football 17 times.
All right, Todd, before we let you go, tell me what has the greater odds of happening next, okay? Greatest odds of happening next. Steph Curry hits another game-winning jumper being single-covered. Okay, that's the first one. Russell Westbrook is traded for John Wall. The Lakers fire Frank Vogel. What has the most likelihood of happening next?
I think Frank Vogel, number one, Steph Curry, number two, and Russell Westbrook for John Wall, number three. But let's give the Rockets a little bit of credit here. They shouldn't have had anybody covering Steph Curry. Let him make the open jumper. Don't be so competitive. If your goal is to tank, you have a long way to go to get to Orlando Magic status, who have a 6-win lead on you, and you're even 3 games ahead of the Detroit Pistons at this point in the season.
You know, I never thought about that because here I was saying, you know, this is why Steph Curry, it's the first buzzer beater of his career because teams know at the end we throw a couple guys at him. He can't get his shot off because he's too small. I didn't think the other way is, hey, we don't care about losing this game. Just let him take the shot. Let him do it. It's okay.
See, that's all. You got to think outside the box sometimes. Yeah. You have to put yourself in very different positions and you play stupid games, you get stupid answers, gentlemen. That's how this business works.
He's on Twitter at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman, our insider in Vegas. Todd, as always, buddy, appreciate your time with us tonight. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, gentlemen. Enjoy the quartet of great games that we have on the horizon this weekend.
See you, brother.
You know, I never thought about that angle on it, Mike. Why not? Why cover him at all? Let him hit the shot. You're 14-32. Oh, well, in that case, then, we'll let it happen that way.
Well, some folks were calling for the push-off. Maybe, I mean, is Steph really that strong? I mean, really? just saying.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Who wants a mustache, right?
Yeah.
Getting set for a big weekend in the National Football League. Divisional playoff weekend, you always get the best games. You get the volume. You get the teams that are playing. We've gotten rid of the teams that haven't played well and weren't good enough. And now we get the divisional playoff round. Mike and
You know, I just had a great reminder come up in my Twitter timeline.
What's that?
On this day in Chicago sports, January 21st, 2007, the Bears defeated the Saints to advance to the Super Bowl.
Oh, look at you. Bears. All right, so speaking of Bears, because the Bears are not playing this weekend, unfortunately. Dick Butkus is playing on Twitter. That's going to be the closest thing you're going to have to that. Is that
now that
he's
got verified, it's all over.
Yeah, he's decided now that I have a blue check mark, I'm going to come after everybody.
I am the captain now.
With that in mind, let's give you our picks for Sunday games. We picked the Saturday games earlier. If you miss any of the show, of course, you get the best of podcast going up in a few minutes. But let's kick things off. Kansas City and Buffalo. I'm taking the Bills. It's Buffalo's time. They are peaking. Normally, I would say this is a team that's going to get a bounce from last week. You know, they're not going to score on seven possessions and a kneel down, but they are playing at this high level. They're going to do offensively what they need to do against Kansas City, and their defense, which is playing at extremely high level, will slow Kansas City down early. And that's a big key because when Kansas City's got to play from behind, they are a different team. Their play is more scattered. It's not as creative. They try to do the same thing downfield all the time, and it doesn't work. The Bills get out to a lead. Kansas City's going to score, but the Bills are going to be able to stay ahead, kind of like the reverse of what last year's game was, and the Bills are able to get a lead and keep it. Give me the Bills over the Chiefs, 38-31.
Long protracted drives the key here, forced by the Buffalo defense. That would be the difference maker as it flows. Look, I picked the Chiefs before the season to play the Niners in the Super Bowl, so I've got to stay with the pick. But I think you know where I lean based on this squad, particularly with Devin Singletary now becoming a bigger force week after week and Allen making plays with his legs. For Patrick Mahomes, imperative that the patience that he's shown these last 10 weeks remains, right? Because once upon a time, you, amongst many other people, just said, all right, this team's not going to work. But they made it work. Defense got better. Offense, they got more patient. And those running backs, not named Clyde Edwards-Helaire, did the job. He's active, so we'll see how he's used in tandem with, obviously, Hill. And Pringle, I think, is a guy to kind of watch. If Kansas City's going to win, they're going to need one of those tertiary receivers to step up.
Rams and Tampa. Give me Matthew Stafford over Tom Brady. For the first time anybody's ever said that.
Blasphemer!
Look, the Bucs are not 2020 sharp. I've said this all week. They're not going in like they did last year. Winning four in a row, Brady at a high level, and most importantly, everybody was healthy. Their receiving core is dinged up. No Godwin, no Antonio Brown. Both their running backs are hurt. Two of their offensive linemen got sprained ankles. This is a difficult ask of a Bucs team that's just sort of, gotten by the last few weeks. It's going to be really, really difficult. Brady's going to have to throw the ball really early because the Rams are going to get after him off defensively. The Rams DBs, their cornerbacks are pretty good, so it's going to be tough sledding for Brady. The only way is going to be deep and over the middle, and I don't think Brady's going to have time to do that. So offensively, the Rams are going to keep Tampa Bay at bay. And as long as the Rams throw short and they don't try to force the ball deep to Odell Beckham like they've done too many times, the Rams offense will be just fine. They'll move the ball down the field enough. They'll score enough. You got to stay away from those big mistakes. Stafford can't turn the ball over. But if that's the game plan, give me the Rams over the Bucks 27-20.
Well, Cam Akers' return is the thing that kind of intrigues me in this prospect. Maybe I give a little more to Whitworth than Todd does. Todd Furman, who joined us a little bit earlier at Bet the Board Pod for all the lengthy breakdown that they do. I'm still looking at the defensive front of the Buccaneers to cause some problems and force Stafford into getting rid of the ball early, trying to force the issue, and that's where he gets in trouble. Conversely, obviously, you look at the offensive line for the Buccaneers, very huge issues. Worf's expected to go, but we'll see how much he's able to go. And even if he does, his backup's banged up too, right? Thigh injury for him. So that'll be a curiosity. The return of Leonard Fournette gives me a little bit more comfort and ability to say, Buccaneers, lay the points. They move on and take care of business at home. And the Stafford Boo Birds are out in force.
Oh, look at you not believing in Matthew Stafford. You can never go to Detroit. My family will kick you the hell out.
I don't think I'll be going.
Don't bring that Harmon guy. No muskrat dinners for you then.
Oh, I need a muskrat dinner. We got to do it at least once.
Beat it. Beat it.
A muskrat killed by a musket.
Our best of podcast goes up in about 10 minutes from now. All the big topics we covered tonight, including, hey, Steph will hit a game winner if you single cover him. It's all there, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts. Brian Noah's next. This is Fox.